There you go. Does that feel good?
Yes. Okay, yes, that'll do. But we can... Oh, no, hang on. I turn slightly and I feel something's twisting on me.
It's all right. I think you're fine. And the worst case scenario, you just go up on... I'll just put a handheld mic right there. I'll put the mic on a stand. You want the stand mic?
No.
Okay, because I can put that down on the floor, and if it goes bad, you can just use
just
that.
Just the mobile, a handheld mic a backup would be fine. Yes. Okay, and you're going to adjust, turn off the room light so that...
Yeah, I'll turn these off.
Yes. Excellent.
So if that just doesn't work for you, it's not on right now.
Okay.
You'll just flip that on.
Okay.
Oh, actually, can I see that body pack, Mike? I just need to know what number it is so I can give you the right...
Two.
Okay, I'm going to switch this.
Is that two also as well? Okay. Okay, that's... So these are distinguishable from...
Yes, these from are...
Are you going to be up there?
I'll be up in the balcony.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
Okay. Okay, we've got 5 minutes now.
Let's take a nice photo.
So you got some money?
Yeah. They paid me.
Good. Keep it.
That's what she said. We could do a lot more of these. I'll just take the money. You like that idea. Alright, I gotta get a selfie with the proud wife.
Proud wife?
Yeah.
Come on. Okay. Come on, proud wife. No. I need it. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to write at the beginning. When it looks like most people have arrived. Yes. No. I'm going to stand up. Yes. Hello. It's not switched on yet. Not yet. Do you recognize Jonathan Klein at all?
I could. I think he's here.
Right.
I would love it. I've got a lot of questions. And he definitely hears it different than I.
Hi there. I can ask you an self-interest. Have you seen Jonathan Klein at all in this meeting?
I have not seen him since Sunday.
Okay.
Hi, Lynn.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Okay. Hi,
yeah.
Clark.
Yes.
Yeah, good to see you.
Yeah.
Okay, just curious. Hello there. Good to see you. Yes.
You feel prepared?
I believe so.
Okay.
How'd you do this morning? I wanted to come, but we were just...
Oh, the meditation?
Yeah.
Three people showed up.
Nice.
Come tomorrow?
We live an hour away.
Okay.
Yeah, work hard on making sure we can hear you on the microphone thing.
Yes, because it's not switched on yet.
Oh, that too. Whatever they got, make sure it's working.
Okay, I rely on you.
That's wiggling around.
She's not coming to this.
Okay.
You might put your glasses
on. I rely on you and Max to wave your hands if I'm not loud enough.
Okay, all right.
Oh, Andy's talk this morning.
We're about an hour.
An hour to the west.
No, no. Steve Smith's one. Sister. And she thought he was coming.
No, until yesterday.
Oh. He told me a month ago.
Yeah, he knew, and I think my sister Susie knew, but I said his name's still on the program, and then they crossed it off.
Yeah, well, we didn't cross it off. That was our mistake. Well, yeah. Okay. Is my mic working?
There's one. We're going to share ours.
Good. Okay. Linda, nearly all gone. Okay. There's more people coming.
I have to wait a couple more minutes.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you interested in this book?
I'm Barbara. I'm sitting up
Is the microphone working? Yeah. Because I'm using that as a recording device for the audio with this microphone as a backup. I've started it already. No, it's just recording. Because otherwise, the microphone is going to be the room microphone, which is not nearly as good quality. Yeah, yeah. When it looks like everyone's arrived. Hello, 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 is it working? But I can't, can you hear the microphone? No, she's just checking the reception. So when the microphone works, we can start the talk. Oh, okay. There's still people arriving. Lights, action. Here comes Andy. Thank you. Hello. Hello. It's not. Still not working. Hello there.
Good luck.
Good luck. When the microphone works, I'll start. I could just speak loud. Keep talking. Eventually, it'll be in the whole room. But it hasn't happened yet. Yep, it's good. Is that okay? The microphone is working, is it? Can you hear me? Anyone not hear me, raise their hand. Okay, what? Okay. Okay, so the microphone is now working. We'll begin our talk. So this is an adventure in physics and Swedenborg ideas together. And this is work that I've been working on with our theistic science group. We meet every Monday by Zoom. And some of the people in that group are in the room. Three, four of us at least. And the group's website is theisticscience.com. So this talk will be eventually put on that website as well as other websites. And in the meantime, my wife Lynn is going to pass around a sheet in which you can write your email if you want to receive any notifications about extra material or further work from this. And so the purpose of this talk is to continue what Andy Heilman did earlier this morning. He also wanted to bring new church ideas and physics ideas together. And so this is a more general case is the question of religion and science. Are they separate or connected? And because they need each other. To paraphrase Einstein, the religion needs science because it's lame, and science needs religion because it's blind. Of course, Einstein got it around the wrong way and he became famous, but at least we could say it properly among ourselves. And so my plan in this afternoon is to use ideas from the writings in order to advance science, to make a proposal for some new science. And I'm going to use the ideas of discrete degrees and influx. Now, many of you will have read about discrete degrees when you read Swedenborg, but I assume from my experience that everyone has their own interesting version of discrete degrees. Because you all know from Divine Love and Wisdom that it's important, but everyone reads it in a slightly different way. So I'm going to propose changes to physics in order to explain the steps of the mind-body connection. So the aim is to explain something very obvious, that the mind and body are connected, and I'm going to know what effect this has on physics. And then I want to suggest how these physical changes, if my predictions are correct, explain them, how they can be measured. And this kind of activity, our group is called Theistic Science. We're trying to make a theistic science or a new church science. We're trying to make a science, for the theory of which assumes the existence of God, of theism. Not like ordinary science, which assumes that there is no such God. We want to assume that there is a God, because if they're free to decide not, we're free to decide there are, and we should be able to see what we can do, and may the best science, but the best theory win, so to speak. So, to explain myself, I've been studying theoretical physics in Swedenborg for the last 50 years. I started in New Zealand. That's where I lived for the first 26 years of my life. I have a website, ianthompson.org, where you can see the history of my career as a nuclear theory person in New Zealand, and then in England, and then in Livermore, California. And I retired 2 months ago, and for the last year, my wife and I have been living in near Birdsboro, and not far from here, 1 hour's drive from here. So I hope to have more contact. And 13 years ago, I wrote a book called Starting Science from God, which is rational scientific theories from theism, trying to take this whole project of assuming that there is a God of theism and trying to work out what science would look like. There's more information at this beginning science, beginningtheisticscience.com. But today, I'm going to take a particular thread of the proposals in that book, namely the connection between the mind and brain, and trying to work out a more detailed theory of how this connection would work. And there's still three copies of the book left. So and if you're, it's available on Amazon, etc. And so, to look at the problem that we have, the mind-body connection. If I want a drink of coffee, as I do at the moment, where do you get coffee in this place?
Only in the breakfast room.
Oh. I can go. I think I'll leave now and go down the road. But if I'm interested in coffee and I have a desire to drink coffee, then my arm would reach over to where it sees the coffee cup to be. And so the fact that my arm is a physical object moves over in that direction means that my desire and thought of coffee must have influenced the brain and influenced my nerves and influenced the muscles in my arm, and eventually will influence the position of the coffee to bring it nearer. And so it's obvious to us, to nearly everyone in the world, that there is a connection between mind and body. But most scientists, as I point in the next bullet here, most scientists and philosophers say that minds and bodies are so different in nature, we can't even imagine how they would interact. I need some water. And so they say minds are not in space, they are not material, they are just like phenomena, just qualia, just thoughts. They can't imagine how they would interact. And part of that problem is that they insist on what's called causal closure of the physical world, which says that every physical effect has a physical cause. Okay, so that seems obvious to them, but that very fact rules out God creating the universe. So you know that there's something not quite right, that they assume something which is so constraining to what they do. And so they think that the brain is all there is, and so that they say the brain itself must think, feel, and act. And so strange ideas like panpsychism and panpsychism and other ideas creep into science, which are all causes of physical. But we want to use ideas from Swedenborg and try and explain what they're missing when they say that the minds and bodies are so different that they can't possibly interact. Because, as I said, our minds and our brain and our body definitely interact, and everyone has experience with that. So so we would say the mind and body are distinct. But they're closely connected. And so many people say that mind and body are the same thing. There's a sort of a monistic or non-dualist approach that many people use when they stop believing in materialism. But we're going to use a slightly more advanced idea from Swedenborg, in which there are actually discrete degrees, several discrete degrees between God and the universe, the material universe. So we're going to use the concept of discrete degrees connected by influx and work out what it would mean in detail. And we want to show how this theory predicts measurable effects. I mean, it must have effects. It must have effects on the brain, on the arm, etc. So, and this could be part of an extended science or extended theistic science that we say there. And to remind ourselves about discrete degrees, I'm just going to show the full Heaven and Hell 38. I'm not going to read it all, but I'll read the potted summary here, that there are degrees of two kinds. There are continuous degrees and discrete degrees. I'm not going to go into continuous degrees in much detail, but I want to emphasize what discrete degrees are like, because the properties of discrete degrees we must try and understand in a better way in order to
understand what the kind of theories that we can make. So discrete degrees are distinguished like post and prior, prior and posterior. Prior means comes first, and posterior means comes afterwards. So, and so the like cause and effect. A cause comes first, and an effect comes second. And discrete degrees are distinguished like what produces and what's produced. And so influx is continually producing things from what already exists, and then there's something new that's produced, and we have to understand what's produced and what produces. So, and the important thing is that discrete degrees, you can't measure them by distance. You can't travel from one discrete degree to another one. It's the same principle as you can't get in a spaceship and travel around the universe and come into heaven. The heavens are a discrete degree distinct from the material world, and that you can't continuously travel from one discrete degree to another. And so that's what it means by distance. But I could also add they're not distinguished by time either. Swedenborg reminds us that clock time is something that doesn't appear in the spiritual world. There are changes of state, or what we could call process time, in the spiritual world. There are successive things, but the spiritual world doesn't have time, so that it means that the rate of time, the rate of any process, so imagine vibrations. The vibrations occur, that you distinguish one vibration from another by the rate at which they occur. But this rate is not something that can be used to distinguish a discrete degree from another. No. So discrete degrees, Swedenborg says, are here needed to understand the differences between the heavens, between the interior and exterior faculties of a person, to understand the difference between spiritual world and the natural world, and most importantly for this project, the difference between a spirit of a person and his body. And then he says, if any of these differences are taken as continuous, in other words, we could progressively move from one to the other, then we confuse the spiritual and the natural. So I assume that this kind of text is something that you have seen many times before, but it's important to remember the details here, and because discrete degrees are something unique that Swedenborg has described, and it's a very useful tool, set of concepts, in order to understand many things. So discrete degrees are discrete, they're different, but we need to know how they're connected. They're connected by influx, and so first of all, each discrete degree has its own substance and its own forms in its own realm. So each discrete degree is like a space that you can travel within that space, but you can't go to the space of a different discrete degree. And then discrete degrees come in threes of end, cause, and effect. So the end is higher, the cause is middle, and the effect is lower. So that to say higher, middle, and lower is actually a spatial metaphor. So, but we can understand we really have to understand what an end is and what a cause is and what an effect is, and then we can see how they're how they're related. And to connect discrete degrees, we need what Swedenborg calls influx. Influx is when a higher degree produces something in a lower degree. That seems fairly straightforward. The higher degree doesn't flow into and the lower degree. It doesn't combine itself into pieces to make a lower degree. It doesn't split into pieces to make a lower degree, but it produces something new in the lower degree. That's what we mean by influx. And furthermore, it depends on what's already in the lower degree as a kind of preparation or foundation for what is produced. And so this means that ends at higher degrees cause lower degree effects by means of some middle degree. And so we'll see how that works in some cases. And then this influx produces correspondences. Correspondences are different forms of behavior which are the same form in different discrete degrees. Even though the substances are different in, say, heaven and earth, there are plants in heaven and there are plants on earth. The plants on earth have a different substance than the plants in heaven. But the form, the behavior that they do, like they receive light from the sun, they grow leaves, they produce flowers and fruits, these are the same functions in the different discrete degrees, even though the substances in the spiritual world are different. They're spiritual substances compared with material substances. And so the correspondences mean that influx can continually carry on, and the prerequisite is there for continual influx. Now, we could talk a lot about discrete degrees. So this is the big picture of discrete degrees, and then I'm going to focus for the rest of the talk on just what happens between two or three of these degrees. So there are nine discrete degrees there. You may not have heard of that there are nine discrete degrees, but when you take Swedenborg's ideas, you see that the heavens there are three heavens. There are the physical world has three forms. Andy talked about the three forms from some works of Swedenborg. And then the exterior mind also has, the central mind has exterior, external rational and an internal rational. So here's where the loves are, here's where the thoughts are, and here's where the effects are. But the loves themselves form three discrete degrees together. And the mind, the parts of the mind also have three discrete degrees together. And the natural world has three discrete degrees together. And so the talk that I'm going to give is how to go from the sensual down into the natural, the physical world here. Okay, I should have called this the physical world. I do it at the bottom. This talk is mostly focusing on what happens at the very bottom here. And so I kind of just want to remind myself, okay, so I'm going to stop in a couple of slides and ask if people have questions, because I'm sure I've covered quite a bit of ground. And so...
I've got one here.
Yes, you can give me one. My wife has one here. Sorry. Is the microphone working again?
No.
No? Oh dear. Okay. So we'll...
Yeah, let me get
you a You undo it. So, what was I saying? Yes. Every so often through this talk, I have a slide that just says questions. And so I've been going through without waiting for you to ask questions, but in a couple of slides I'm going to stop and ask for questions, and then we'll carry on for another number of slides, and then we'll have another slide which is questions. So that's the way I'm trying to organize the interaction with the audience.
Could you increase the treble and diminish the bass? Is that possible to do it with yourself?
I don't know. That's a lot of bass, isn't it? Okay, she says we're limited to make it loud enough. So I'd like you to help me choose the right distance to the mic. That's too close? Oh, I like moving around, I'm sorry. I'm gonna, okay, so I'm going to show if there are discrete degrees in the physical world, then you would expect physics to know about that already, apart from as well as what Swedenborg said. The physicists haven't read Swedenborg, but if this kind of way of looking at the physical world is valuable, then there should be some indication from science, and in fact there is. There are actually discrete degrees within the physical. We go from causes to effects, all connected. So the first three bullets describe three steps that quantum physics takes to be part of the way the world is created or organized as it knows. So it has a Lagrangian, which is, you probably can't read it there, but it gathers together into a single function all of the interactions with bare masses and bare charges. And then quantum field theory takes the Lagrangian and it includes all of the possible interactions, and it makes the electric and magnetic forces that interact between particles. And then quantum mechanics, ordinary quantum mechanics, with a Schrödinger equation, use the forces from quantum field theory and can then look at the dynamics of particles, atoms, and molecules. And so I just mentioned my life as a theoretical nuclear physicist is taking the results of quantum field theory to look at the interaction between neutrons and protons, and then looking at the behavior of nuclei of physicists. I'm a nuclear physicist. And then quantum physics, so from the Lagrangian through field theory to quantum mechanics, are like three discrete degrees. The physicists, not really used to that idea, they keep arguing which is the fundamental one, and they say one's the fundamental, the other ones are just means of calculation. But from Swedenborg, we know that when there are three discrete degrees, they all three exist in some way, and so we don't have to argue which was the real one, which was born first, or something like this. So, and then quantum physics works for small objects, but for large objects, you can approximate quantum physics extremely well by Newtonian physics, or various other approximate forms, something you get F equals ma. But the question here is, this is what quantum physics, the sort of the standard model, as they say in physics, looks like. But then the question is, where do these initial masses and charges come from? And so what determines the initial bare masses and charges? And are there ends or targets? And is there a formative degree? Because back here, I have actual effect, which is from quantum physics, and then virtual processes from quantum field theory. And I put here some kind of ends in physics, which at the moment physics doesn't know about. So the interesting question is there something in the physical world that's like a formative degree that we would expect from Swedenborg's way of looking at discrete degrees, but it's not known in physics? So we're going to focus on two adjacent discrete degrees, the mind and body. The mind is, I'm going to just simplify the previous one. So we're going to think of the mental and physical as two adjacent discrete degrees, and we want to know how they are connected. What's happening? But we know that they are connected because every time I think of a desire to move my hand moves, so that there is a physical change that comes. So that they must be connected with correspondences. There are several connections that must be important. There's what we call the will connection, which is when our desires of our will may have an effect in the body. The will connection conveys intentions down. This is the red arrow going down from the mind and into the body. That's what I'm going to discuss today. There must also be a kind of connection between them, because sensory information, my eyes and my ears, are in the material world, and then somehow my mind gets to hear and see what my ears and eyes have sensed. So there must be some way of giving information back up. But I'm going to discuss that another time. So this is just the beginning of theistic science. I've worked out some ideas, but it's a longer story. And so this is a reminder that because these are discrete degrees, we have a kind of dualism of mind and body. Mind and body are not the same thing, but they're connected, very intimately connected between by influx of two different kinds in two different directions. And so this influx from the mental is from the mental degree into the physical degree. And so the question today is how that works, and I want to know when this influx occurs. I want to know what are the prerequisites in the physical world for this influx to occur, and I want to know what is produced in the lower degree. When the mind influences the brain to do something. So now I have a gap for questions. So I've covered a lot of discrete degrees.
Okay, so I'm...
Okay, you ask the question and I'll repeat that.
Okay, so this is something that I might want to ask you a little later, but I'm actually... I'm actually debating over whether mind and body should be considered complete separate degrees, because I'm going to, going back to one of Eric Kandel's basic experiments, if you remember he had a snail with a little spout in it, and he kept tapping the siphon until the neuron learned to withdraw the siphon because it was going to get hit.
Okay.
And there was a process by which the neuron, by which he measured neuronal change at the cellular level corresponding.
Okay. Can I say this is probably a little bit complicated?
Okay. Sure.
But you've given me your email, so we'll carry on with that. Does anyone else have questions?
So what is the mechanism for one degree affecting the other?
Basically, one degree affects a lower one when it wants the lower one to do something useful.
No, I understand, but how? I mean, what is it?
That's the question I'm trying to get to in my talk altogether.
So it's like ether that's...
Well, yeah, it could... Could be, yes. That's on the way, on the track. Remember that answer later. Okay. Does anyone?
This is probably way beyond what we're going to get to, but are you familiar with ATS-CDF correspondence?
You mean in general relativity? So, I'm. Okay, he's interested in whether he refers to a technical issue in the quantum gravity or whatever it is, general relativity.
It's an attempt mathematically to relate the nucleus of each atom.
Yes.
Okay.
So your question involves gravity, and I'm avoiding gravity at the moment. Okay, Andy touched on gravity, and we all got rather interested. So that's another subject.
Cool.
Okay, is there a question here?
I've noticed, and it could be off, and I'd like to know whether you've noticed, whether the discrete degrees in some way rotate before they descend. They switch. They're somehow opposite. Like in the writings, and that's what I go by, I don't know much about physics, but I've noticed that the discrete degrees switch from naming things, like Swedenborg will give a name, and then he'll go more general, like woman, and then a name, and then as it descends into the natural world. Do you have a correlation?
I haven't thought about that issue. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I'm proposing
somehow
that, DNA, there's an idea that maybe DNA is outside the physical realm, but then it's also rotated and twisted.
It is, isn't it? Okay, let's think. She's talking about whether there's any rotational twisting as you descend from one degree to the other. Like DNA has its own unique twist and information in it. The answer is I don't know. We'll take one more question.
So are you equating influx to a force?
You're jumping ahead. It'll be there in a minute. Okay, so if we look at existing physics, current physics, there are four forces. This is what then the standard model of physics is: gravity, which is attractive; electromagnetism, which is alternately attractive and repulsive; the strong nuclear force, which holds the nucleus together, is attractive at long distances and repulsive at short distances; and then there's a weak nuclear force, which means that neutrons decay into protons if you leave them for a long time by themselves, and it's responsible for slow processes like the sun. Otherwise, the sun would go. The main constraint of the sun's long lifetime is to have this from the weak nuclear force. Otherwise, everything. Oh, sorry. Yes. So there are four forces in standard physics. And these forces conserve energy if the universe is closed. And so that means that nothing interesting can happen from the mind. The mind can't do anything. As well as these four forces, there may be also dark matter, which enables galaxies to rotate more evenly, which might be useful. And then there's also, they think these days, dark energy, which means that the whole universe expands slightly faster than it would otherwise, which might also be useful. But my remark here is that there's no sign in any of this current physics, there's no sign of any spiritual or mental influx. The only thing that they may possibly concede is that the Big Bang looks like it had a cause that's not physical. They admit that, if pressed, but very reluctant to do so. So something has to change. And something must be different in physics and physiology because of spiritual input. So the mental desires and intentions must have an effect on neurons, because they lead to bodily movement, and bodily movement is controlled by neural activity. It's possible that the mental desires and intentions may also produce changes in general cellular biochemistry, like proteins may fold differently because of spiritual influx in order to form a particular, in order to get to a particular form. And so I just make the general case, there must be something new in physics that comes about because of influx. So when I'm looking for something new, I'm trying to keep general physical theories to work as well as possible as they are, so that suns, microscopes and cell phones still work. I mean, unless your mind affects your arm to throw it on the ground or something. So that material things, I say, are maintained by immediate influx into all non-living things. This is a general principle that the Lord controls most of the universe by immediate influx into ultimates, which is the material world, and that's how non-living things are sustained. So I'm trying to find a soft spot in physical theories so that the laws are not always completely fixed, but they can vary a little bit from time to time as part of a bigger picture. So that's the ambition I'm trying to reach in this talk. Where the influx, so we're now talking influx from the mind into the brain. So the mind gets its own influx from the heavens, so that we're talking about immediate influx. So this is third or fourth stage influx from the exterior mind into the material brain. And this must show up in living organisms? I mean, because otherwise, how would the spirit of a living organism attach to a particular to a particular being? It must show up in even the smallest cells. I mean, even in bacteria, you can argue that they don't argue about viruses, probably not in viruses, but bacteria have their own metabolism, their own targeting process. They can follow scents, they can follow food, etc. And it probably occurs, it must especially occur in the brains of mammals, because mammals have feelings and thoughts, well, in insects as well, but especially in mammals, there's more complicated thoughts and affections. And in human brains, there are thoughts, affections, and also rational thoughts of a variety of forms. And so that in human brains, there must be some particular way in which influx occurs that has an effect. So influence should make difference in all of these ways, but the question is, what differences does it make in these three, four places? What differences exactly? And how could we tell if influx is occurring or not? So this is the challenge to meet. And so now we come to this question of spiritual forces, okay? So we can make a list of the kinds of effects in the physical world that influx may have. The first kind of effect is that there is another kind of mental particle that exists alongside all the physical particles. This is what the Greeks thought, Lucretius and Democritus. You think of them as materialist atomics, but they also thought that the minds were just another kind of particle.
Put your mic. And
they thought the minds were another kind of particle. And another alternative could be that, as well as the four forces that I described earlier, there could be a mental force or a vital force in addition to those four forces. So that should show up with its own kind of effects. A third option is that it's a local variation or modification of an existing physical force. So that maybe the mind changes gravity slightly, maybe the mind changes electric forces slightly, maybe the mind changes one of the nuclear forces slightly. This is a different kind of effect from the first one. The first one has mental particles which then have to collide with material particles. The second one is that there's a fifth force, which means that particles, that forces in physics are always forces of something on something else, forces of something on something else. So it's a bit tricky to work out. A fourth option is one that's very common when philosophers speculate about these questions today, is that quantum measurements, physics says that quantum measurements have random effects. Whereas we could imagine that the mind influences the randomness of quantum measurements in order to achieve particular effects. You can load the dice to achieve particular results when there's randomness. And then, as well as those four things, there's a general, you can combine any of them with a requirement about final causes or ends and targets. In other words, that whether the mind can tell the body to achieve a particular target. Do you have a question?
Yeah, so I'm just trying to give an analogy here, and then I'm not sure which one of these factors fall under, right? You have a computer with a computer screen.
Yes.
You have processors that is running in like the main part of the computer called the CPU and stuff.
Yeah.
Processors are actually running there. It gets projected onto pixels on the screen, right? If the screen is our physical dimension.
Is what?
If the screen can be analogous to physical dimension that we are in, and the signals traveling through the wires from the CPU core to the screen can be thought as influx. If that is the case, which of the categories?
Okay. You if the screen was the physical world,
yes,
then you're saying there's a new kind of causal processes, new kind of cause which is operating in the physical world.
Yes, it projects on the screen.
So this will be like the second one. There's the there was a new kind of influence on our brain from something that we didn't know about before.
But that will be outside of the physical.
Yeah, if it's not physical itself. I'm just going to make a general remark first, is that you say if the screen is like a fifth dimension. You said that. Like a physical. So you're saying that the mind is like another dimension of the physical?
No, I'm saying the mind transcends.
I think I understood his question, if I could.
Yes, you have a go.
He has an analogy, and the analogy is that what we see projected on a screen is analogous to the physical world. The mechanisms within the computer that create that projection are analogous to the mind or the spirit or the mental world.
Yes.
His question is, according to taking that analogy, which of your five possibilities does that align with?
Well, it sounds like what I would call idealism, in which the mind is entirely responsible for producing what the physical world is all the time, and there aren't any
No,
because I'm assuming here that the physical world has its own causal interactions. The four forces of physics, I'm assuming, actually still exist. But in your metaphor, for those four forces to exist, there's like the pixels on the screen would have to interact with each other by forces. You see, your model doesn't allow the physical world to actually have forces and interactions between them. It doesn't give any substance to the physical world. It only makes the physical world an appearance.
But I guess the pixels do change
in color. I know they change, but it's like a dream that the mental world is producing appearances all the time. But I'm saying that the physical world actually exists. Swedenborg insists that the actual world exists. It has causes. It's important. It's the container. We have to live on Earth before we can live in heaven. It's actually very important to have a physical world. It's not just the screen or an appearance. So I'm pushing back on the validity of your metaphor. Do you have a short question?
Well, no, just go ahead. That's okay.
Okay, we'll come back. There'll be another question in interval. And so I'll explain later what I mean by causes and targets. And so now the interesting thing is we now come to use our knowledge of the writings of Swedenborg and we'll try and work out what would we expect of those four or five options to actually exist if the world is described as in the writings. This is the question. So now we're using our understanding of Swedenborg to decide which new physical proposal looks the best. Swedenborg talks a lot about influx producing ends. He talks about influx produces uses, and uses produce forms, and forms produce effects. So when he talks about ends, these are the things that are desired to happen in the future. That's what an end means. It means a final cause. Aristotle had final causes as one of the four principal kinds of causes, but the scientists of 400 years ago deliberately removed all talk of final causes from physics. So now we want to follow Swedenborg and put something like this back. So I think Swedenborg would insist that there are final causes, there are ends. Ends, I'm going to use the word ends for final causes in the mind, because these are the ends we have in view. But I'm going to use the word targets for ends in the physical degree. Now, we would expect, from the writings, we expect influx from a spiritual degree into an existing physical process. because our mental influx, our mind produces effects most in our bodies, nearly all the time it produces effects in our bodies rather than in the whole room, okay? I mean, there are unusual situations in parapsychology, etc., and I'm sure many of you will have your own experiences of unusual cases in which influx produces effects outside your body, but from the biological and functional point of view, influx is always into an existing physical form. So this means that it either modifies in existing forces, this option three, or modifies an existing random process, option four. So I'm going to say that from the point of view of the writings, we would expect there to be ends on targets or as final causes. We would expect there to be modification of existing variations on existing forces or variations of existing random processes. And now I remark that this quantum proposal has often been suggested, but it's actually an extremely small effect because the quantum processes in living cells, the quantum processes occur when there's entanglement at very small sizes, in particular atoms and molecules. Some people like John Eccles and others have suggested this, but it's actually quite difficult to get a large effect. So as a result of these recommendations that we get from knowledge, our knowledge of the writings, I'm going to recommend that we have three, which is modification of existing forces, temporary modifications of existing forces, number three, along with five, which are targets. So I'm going to say that influx modifies existing forces to achieve ends which are given as targets. So this is my informed opinion based, well, and the group that I'm working with, our informed opinion of what is important, what is the most likely effect that influx has in the brain, and I'm, this is this last line, is this, this summary. So here again, the ends, so we're going to focus on varying electric forces because electric forces are the ones that are important in living beings. Magnetic forces might be there. Magnetic forces come about when particles move fast relative to the speed of light, and that doesn't happen very often in living organisms. So therefore, it's electric forces, simple electric forces. So we'll come soon to show what they are. So the proposal is that ends in the mental degree are received by influx into the physical degree as targets. And then the strengths of electric forces are varied locally in cells to achieve those targets. In other words, to make molecules move into the targeted arrangements at the targeted times. And now if we remind ourselves about physics and living systems, all living systems have bodies made up of protons, neutrons, etc., and they're arranged in atoms, ions, molecules, and cells. And atoms and ions and molecules have behavior which is governed by electric forces. They are governed by ionic bonds, covalent bonds, molecules that are formed by bonds between atoms and between amino acids and between units of a protein. And so I'm saying that all of these materials that are governed by the electrical behavior will behave slightly differently because of spiritual influx. And so this means that mind, see, a common idea is that mind is electricity in the brain. You must have heard saying, you know, that someone's an electric person, they got lots of thoughts or something, or that a lot of New Age speculation is that the whole universe is governed by electricity, and so on. And it sometimes feels that electricity could be something connected to mental activity. But now I'm saying that the mind controls the details of electric forces as needed in order to achieve particular ends. So, it's another block for questions.
Another
I'm going to eat this. Sorry. Did you? Who raised their hand over here? You did.
So I just want to try to restate what I think you're proposing to make sure that I understand it correctly.
Yes.
Your proposal is that this phenomenon of influx, in which the mental realm affects the physical realm,
yes,
is by means that take place within cells by means of electrical forces being altered, maybe slightly,
yes,
within living cells that make up living organisms.
So exactly, yes. The answer is yes.
The spiritual world or the mental world is operating on our physical bodies,
yes,
through tiny electric impulses in the cells that make up our bodies.
Yes.
And you said, this is my informed opinion. So
yes.
I'm
speculating based on my knowledge of the writings in Swedenborg.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm trying to imagine what he would have thought if he knew about biochemistry and everything. Okay. He was quite vocal, actually.
I'd actually ask you to go back and consider 4 with the, you know, the random processes.
Yes.
Because what's interesting about that is I focus on the synapses.
Yes.
And the sort of Brownian motion of neurotransmitters and things. It doesn't take, I mean, it's not clear how many molecules it takes, so you can get large effects out of very small differences in molecules.
It's actually difficult to get large effects.
Well, except that it's an interesting question of, well, what counts as a large effect in terms of a slight delay or something else. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
The chaos theory.
Yeah, so you have to assume something like chaos theory.
Right.
But the mind, organisms, cells are full of their own kind of chaos, and there's a lot of thermal averaging and thermal damping that happens in warm living creatures, which make it difficult to propagate coherence.
The reason I actually think that that's a useful approach is because, in fact, we're not going to be able to find the effects you're looking for. But if you think about it, the Lord wants to preserve our freedom. And so
he wants to preserve our life more than he wants to preserve our freedom.
Well, no, he wants to preserve our freedom, our life and freedom. But what I'm saying, the reason I'm saying that is I think what the physics is going to prove is that there can be a God, not that there is a God. And so what I would expect, and the reason I prefer the randomness, is that it allows, you know, you're not going to see a pattern there because it's buried in this randomness. That's going to keep us from seeing it. So
okay.
Just a couple thoughts.
Yes, that's what a lot of people have believed over the last 50 years. If my proposal is correct, then there are much larger effects than would ever come about from modulating quantum measurements.
Okay.
So I think both need to be investigated.
I think I'm understanding this, and it seems to be individualized as an individual's mind affecting their processes, and
well, we know that occurs.
So yeah, and the moment that occur and how that works, I think that I don't know if it's a question. I'm wondering if there must be a, from my understanding of the range, there's a process on whether you believe in that or not. So people that have this process regardless but don't understand that there's something spiritual to it, right? They're living this regardless of it, and it's impacting them differently in this world. Whereas the importance of knowing this is if there is a spiritual world, and you buy into it, and then all those end cause effects change. So there's a larger picture.
Well,
so that would bring in the God part of it.
You're talking about two things at the same time. You're talking about our understanding of what's happening, and at the same time, you're talking about a description of what happens in every living thing. I'm saying that every living thing has something like this happening, even if no one understands it.
And if it's there, and then if...
And that affects your answer as well.
And if it's there, then how you relate to that, how you relate to the spirituality or not, impacts everything down.
It affects how you understand it.
Well,
yes.
It's going to affect you.
Yes, okay. Okay, we'll have a question up here.
I'm just asking quickly,
come up with a theory in physics like you just came up with,
okay,
do you then have to construct an experiment that can prove that theory, or how does that process work in physics?
Okay, well, I'll come to that at the end, okay?
Okay, sorry.
No, but it's an important question. You don't have to, but it's good if you do.
Okay.
Someone had to. I mean, it helps.
Okay.
Yes?
I'll use a mic.
Okay. Okay.
It's interesting how electronics inventors have imitated human form in creating their inventions. So think of the telephone, this diaphragm, the loudspeaker you hear right now is vibrating as well, like my vocal cords, and your ears picking it up like the microphone is, vibrating diaphragms. Your eyes are built by the Lord. We as humans build cameras. So what I'm thinking here is the interaction of the mind with the brain's synapse is we created electron tubes and later transistors, and the grid on the tube, so the signal is fed into and blasted through the tube by the filament driving the heat down to the plate. And so that's how you're getting this amplification. This tiny little signal is increased in amplification. So the mind, the spiritual part, is thinking and it's interfacing.
Yes, with the it's. We can imagine everything that happens as a result. There's a couple more people up here that have probably been ignored.
My proposition is that influx terminates in the mind, that the mind is that the will is resident in the mind, and that influx terminates in the will, and that the body is reactionary to the mind.
So the question is how does the body react? Something must be affecting the body if it's going to react.
The body reacts to the will.
Okay, I'm saying this could be the way in which it reacts.
I see.
Okay, one more. We'll ask one more.
I was just wondering about the influx in living creatures versus non-living matter, because I think your proposal is saying that influx is essentially the electrical activity in atoms, ions, molecules. So is there a different type of influx or electrical experience in atoms in non-living matter versus living matter? Do you understand?
Yes, I understand the question. There is a big difference between living and non-living matter.
Right.
And so this is the question I'm trying to answer. I mean, you may discover, having seen that there's a special effect in living matter, that there's still some of it in non-living matter, but that would require investigation.
Okay,
so let's carry on. And so now, if I intend to go for another 20 minutes or so, is that a reasonable time?
Yep.
So now we want to fit into the scheme of the discrete degrees that I showed earlier. So earlier on I showed two discrete degrees in the physical world, and here is the outermost mental degree, which I called, psychologists call, the sensory motor. So it's the motor part of the sensory motor that is part that it's how the body decides what to do something, like move its arm. And so the sensory motor degree is the outermost mental degree, and the Lagrangian is the innermost known physical degree. And this is where I'm saying some such connection should be expected. And so our proposal again is that the mental inferences the value of electric charges. Now you could ask whether physicists have already seen any variation of electric charges. And so far they've only looked at the variations for very distant stars, which are very old. So by looking at distant old stars and looking at the spectral lines, they can see whether the wavelengths of the lines portray any variation in what's called the fine structure constant. John Webb has published some papers in which there's some small variations, about 1 part in 10 to the 5. This, by the way, this is John Webb, not James Webb. James Webb is the telescope. So I'm just mentioning this to say that physicists have considered variations of electric charges, but now I'm doing something completely different,
well, not completely different, but very different. Now I'm talking about mental effects on the physical, and I said, John Webb proposed changes over the age of the universe, but now I'm proposing to have changes over microsecond intervals, you know, so you can actually control the folding of molecules in the cells, you can control the behavior of synapses and firing of neurons within living organisms. I mean, there has to be some influx, there has to be some way of attaching spiritual bodies to material bodies, because they're linked together. And when you die, that's when they separate. But the question is, what is the separation that has to be there before they die? This is I'm talking about living. That's why I'm talking about living bodies. Now, this is a reminder about electric forces. This is the only equation. Oh no, it's not the only. So, Coulomb's law for the force between two charges Q1, Q2 separated at distance r is Q1, Q2 divided by the square of the distance between them. And there's an overall scale factor, 1 over 4 pi epsilon. And this epsilon is called the electrical permittivity, which is just the overall scale factor. And as a reminder, this is Coulomb's well-known inverse square law. So opposite ones attract, and if Q1 and Q2 are the same sign, then F is positive. And if Q1 and Q2 are opposite sign, then F is negative and they attract. So now, varying Q1 will change the force. So it's not a new force, but it's adjusting an existing force. So it's something that could be measurable, you'd think. So if the mental input can vary any of these charges, then they could vary the forces on electrons and ions, and it could make them move differently from before. Okay, so that's okay. So this is... we've been having a lot of questions, but maybe this...
Can you go back to the previous slide?
Yes. So this is the physics that I'm relying on. Yes.
Well, I just keep noticing this idea of a vortical force. Because Swedenborg threw off the idea of ex nihilo.
Yes.
So in the uncreate, love and wisdom were attractive forces cycling together as one into the uncreate. Wasn't the Big Bang, it was a big unfolding. Maybe it unfolded in a influx of vortical force. And in a fractal, geometric way into the natural world, on down to the cells.
Okay, you're introducing lots of slightly complicated ideas about vortex and fractal, which we haven't really explored in detail how they're important.
Would vortical force be the way influx moves?
A vortical force describes the form or manner in which a force acts. It acts by twisting. And so I haven't yet said anything about the manner in which you could take this kind of theory and work out how a vortical force would work.
That's what Maxwell did.
Sorry?
That's what Maxwell did.
Yes. Okay, shall I carry on? One more question?
Can you give us an example of what a Q1 might be?
Okay. For a proton, it's 1.6 times 10 to the minus 19 of a Coulomb. An electron, they're both the same but opposite. So that's the standard charge on an electron and a proton. It's the unit charge. All protons that we know of have the same charge. And all electrons that we know of have the same charge. So because of that, I'm going to show a way of slightly reformulating my proposal, hang on, I just want to
Actually, no, I haven't. So I didn't. No, so I've missed something out. Sorry. So your question is, you want to know how it varies. You want to know. I've told you the starting value of Q1.
Well, we're talking Q1. You're talking in the natural plane.
Yes, in the natural plane. That's the charge of the proton and electron. The influx varies it. For a short time, it makes the charge on the electron 20% bigger, so that it's attracted more to other protons for a short time, more than usual, so that it pulls the molecule towards the protons more than it would otherwise happen, and therefore it can control some behavior in the cell. Okay, I'll come to this. It's not. Okay, so I'm now going to mention something for sure. I'm not going to mention it in much detail, but I want to mention that we have targets, or ends, or final causes. Yeah, sorry, I've missed out a slide. I simplified it too much. So I want to, actually what I'm going to do, Sorry, I don't have the extra slide. I've simplified the talk a bit much. But, sorry?
Microphone.
The microphone.
Ian, that's the right slide.
Okay, so in the slide which is missing, I'll just talk about this one. So when I show epsilon there, it means that I'm varying the strength of the electric force. And so I said that as well as the electric force being varied, but it's varied in a particular way to meet a target. And so I'm saying that the sensory motor mind decides that I want to move my hand over here. So it sends to the muscles a target that at some time, 1 second later, my hand should be over there. And therefore, so the ends in the mental degree are received into the physical degree. And a target is something that can be used in a feedback system. Michael Levin is a cell biologist who's looked at the way cells behave when they've been disturbed. And he says that cells they know what shape they're supposed to achieve, that's the target. And it can tell if its current shape differs from the target, and it calculates how to go from the initial state to the final state, and then it has a series, it's a kind of loop, a self-surveillance loop to tell when it gets to its final state. So I'm saying that the targets varies the electric charges, and then there's a feedback loop to continually varying the electric charges until it achieves the desired result. So I'm not giving any detail about how this works, but we can see that if it did work, if there were targets, then this is the way our arms move to pick up a cup. We just have a desire to pick up a cup. We imagine where our hand is going to be. We compare the, so as we move our hand towards a cup, we see how it's getting closer, and we see how we have to move our hand to get slightly close to the cup and right on the handle. And then if there's a mismatch, then we send another signal to the arm. And so this is a kind of feedback loop, which is very common in biological organisms.
it has a general name of homeostasis, which is just to maintain the existing state. But you can imagine a slightly different kind of homeostasis, which has the target is not just the existing state, but some slightly different state in which the arm is over here. If you could set up the targets for the cell to move in a particular way, then you delegate the details of moving to achieve a particular target, and the mind doesn't have to micromanage every molecule, which is a mind-boggling task, especially for bacteria. So the purpose of targets is to send to the physical organism a position where the molecules should be at some future time, and then there is built into the cell a feedback loop which can then keep going until it reaches that target. And so this is an additional proposal, as well as the fact that electric charges vary. And this is actually very important from the biological point of view, because up to now, the question of purposes and targets and ends in biology has been of enormous debate and sometimes animated discussion among biologists and philosophers, because most of them say that modern physics is purely naturalized and there's no such things as ends, purposes, or targets in nature, in living nature. But here, I'm taking the courage from having read Swedenborg and having the ability, having made one change to physics, I'm making a second change, that there are targets which can be manage behavior to achieve particular ends. And so targets, in my case, they receive a final cause from the mental degree. They determine the differences between the current state and that target. Then they vary the charges or the electric permittivities to achieve the difference. And so I say, I want this done in the inmost physical degree, which was that formative degree I had right at the beginning, which I said doesn't appear in standard physics. And so this means that the higher mind is not used for micromanaging. It just sets a particular future target. It can anticipate future targets, and it avoids using time travel. And so it makes a kind of physical feedback loop. And I was going to go on and talk about it in this talk, but decided that that's another subject.
Could you go back one or two slides? One more. Oh, yes, there. I'm speculating here, and are you saying the reason that this quantum state exists is for the Lord to create sort of like a divine intervention in our neurons? Let's say someone's having a panic attack and the Lord wants to calm them down.
No, I'm not so dramatic. I'm saying that before we know about any divine interventions, we have to know how normal life works. I'm talking about what happens everyday life for every cell for the last 3 million years, okay?
Okay, so you're postulating that that's part of the normal mechanism.
Yes, nothing. Yes, I
okay.
am.
Okay.
You have a.
Quantum objects, are they physical objects?
Yes.
Or are they.
Yeah, they are physical objects.
Objects.
No. Spiritual objects are blue and off to the left here. This is just the outermost spiritual degree.
So it would be a quantum.
Yeah, so a quantum object is like an electron or a molecule or an atom moving around. Because we know that behaves according to quantum physics.
But on his question of divine intervention is happening all the time, every place, every time. And so that's part
well, except if it occurs all the time, why do you call it intervention if he's always there?
No, I understand, but it's a question of intervention versus assistance. And we use intervention as the one in a million miracle versus
yes.
seeing all of...
Sometimes the divine does intervene,
yeah.
And I'd like to have a word to describe that unusual process like incarnation.
So then you're talking about the sustenance, the divine sustenance of the world.
Yes, this is the normal way in which the world is set up to be managed, and living creatures born, live, and die.
Perfect.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll carry on. Okay, now we come to the brain at last, because the purpose, how are we going? 3 o'clock. The purpose of this talk was to look at the interaction between mind and brain. And so this is a reminder about how brains work. Signaling in the brain occurs by synapses from one neuron to another. The electrical signal which is propagated by ionic transmission through pores in and out of the neuron, makes a signal travel down from one neuron up to another one, and then it comes in into a synaptic vesicle here, and it causes one of these little green, well, they're not green really, the colored green
synaptic
vesicles to release its internal molecules, which travel over across the gap into a second neuron, which then gets excited. And if enough neurotransmitters are released from the synaptic vesicle into the receiving one, then the second neuron will then send a signal down its main axon. So that's the standard view of neurotransmission. So there are electric thresholds that are important in two places. The first electric threshold is there enough signal coming in down the first axon which is sufficient to release, get one of these synaptic vesicles to open? And what I've read, the probability is only about 20% of a vesicle being released after one neuron pulse. So there's a threshold there which comes from the electric strength of this incoming potential. And then the second threshold is in the receiving neuron. There has to be enough input coming into that. So the first one is the probability of the incoming action potential to release neurotransmitters from the synaptic vesicle. And then the receptor neuron has to have enough input into it in order for its voltage to change enough to initiate an action potential on its own neuron, and then it sends this pulse, and then it takes a while to recover from that. And so because these two probabilities or two threshold behaviors depend on electric forces, that we can conclude. Okay, so both thresholds appear to be related to electric voltages. So therefore, both thresholds can be fine-tuned by mental influx, because the mental influx can change the voltages, can modulate the voltages by modulating the strength of the electric forces and influence the probability of these neurons firing. So mental influx can modulate by means of controlling a very limited amount of electric force. It can modulate the activity of many neurons. And then I'm assuming that the brain can detect patterns of neural firing, that's what it seems to be good at, and then cause actions. So the result is that minds can control bodily actions in a way which a lot of people have disputed as possible in the past, especially from the scientific side. The only way they could do it is to use this quantum process, but that's extremely weak. But this can be done much more readily and strongly. And showing how this could happen has been the aim of this talk. So if I just go through so now we come to experimental measurements. So the general prediction is that processes with charged particles can be led to targeted results. And the electric charges, or equivalently, which I didn't explain, the vacuum permittivity can change. And so you have to have some way of detecting the effect of changes of permittivity or electric charges, which in principle should be possible with modern instruments. You could have, you know, resonance spectroscopy of how atoms and molecules can have varied their excitation energies, ought to be possible to be measured. So something, if the proposal here is at all reasonable, then it ought to have some effects which can be measured. So we should be able to measure level changes of atoms in the causal chain. So atoms will have brief shift in energies, and their fluorescent light will vary in energy, and the spectral line will shift slightly for a short time. That's the prediction. And then the people who have measured the stars at large distances had a similar problem. They wanted, but they had a worse problem because they didn't even know how far the stars were away. Therefore, they didn't know what the redshift was. And therefore, they could only look at differences between lines that were independent of how, what the overall redshift was. And so their plot here is changes in the electric charge, and this is how various the wavelengths of various lines varied, and they were looking for those changes with spectroscopes attached to large telescopes. So these things are possible. And so we have two questions that we hope to have at least proposed an answer to. How do mental effects change, and what do mental effects change in physics? They change the electric charge, or equivalently, the electric permittivity in the vacuum. And they can be used in physiology because the behavior of cells can be modified by these electric changes. And especially if there's a physical feedback mechanism to allow targets to be influential in controlling the behavior of cells in the near future. So the implications are that these effects may seem to be quite small, but at least we can see how spiritual things can have effects in nature, and these effects should be measurable. And the result is that no longer is the physical universe causally closed. In other words, there are some causes which affect physical things which are not themselves physical, which a lot of scientists and philosophers assume that to be true without any question. And those are my references. This is the group that I've been working with over the last 8 years. So it's 3:10 now. I assume you want to leave within the 5 minutes. So we have a room for a few questions.
Have you looked into AlphaFold or any like machine learning protein folding, just because it feels very relevant?
Yes, I've had some fun inventing my own folding molecules and getting the feedback work system to work. It actually works sometimes. It doesn't. I haven't got it to work reliably.
I would love to hear more about that.
Yes, it's on GitHub. But it's private, so if you're curious, I can. Okay, I'm just taking short questions, please.
If you change the charge on an electron, does it change the wavelength of light?
Yes.
Because there's.
It changes the wavelength of transition between one state to another. Yes. Carry on, sorry.
Well, you could use that to interact with the light-sensitive ions in a neuron.
Yes.
You can engineer neurons to
fire. Oh, that's true, yes.
When light is shined on them.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole lot of fluorescent neurons now out there.
So, in principle, you could cause a chain reaction. If this effect is present, you could...
Oh, okay, you could put the right sensitive there and then watch for the signal. Yes. Good one. Yes.
To shift off the science towards the theology side of things, what you're describing to me seems like an equivalent to the Benjamin part of the children of Israel and their descriptions on a spiritual level as the connection between the spiritual and the natural.
Yes.
This Benjamin character who's just the connector.
That's his job, yes.
So I'm curious if that is where some
of the concepts come from. Okay. He's suggesting that this kind of project is like a Benjamin project where you connect between the spiritual and the natural. It's Benjamin is one of the 12, the last and favored son of Joseph.
Jacob, sorry.
Yes. Joseph was not the last son. Yes. Yes. That's a good metaphor. Connections are very important.
Oh, I wonder about the theology in that influencing what this
Yes.
Theory.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
He's asking a question.
He's suggesting a correspondence.
That's okay.
Okay, any last question? I'm trying to know how it's possible for any of them to have any effect in the physical world.
Okay.
So this is a principle. Now we have to look at, I've only treated one mind here, the sensory motor. There could be other ones.
Okay.
So it's just the beginning. Okay, thanks folks.
I think I met you before in California.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So this was actually very interesting. Like about electrons and stuff. And if you actually want, I can give you the book. That's also fine. Yeah, this one's about spiritual metaphysics and stuff. I don't have too much insight understanding.
No. Yeah. Okay. This is a bit complicated to read, but.
No. I said I can give you the book.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Harold Sandstrom.
Hello.
I hope that I can send this slide thing to my son Mike, who teaches neuroscience.
Yes.
And he just published a chapter online for a textbook in neuroscience.
Yeah.
Mind control of motion. And a lot of this stuff is right down his alley.
Okay, you sure?
I hope we can connect with your group.
Did you write your email?
I did.
Is it obvious which is your email?
Yes. Harold Sandstrom, I just printed it very carefully. So.
Okay, I'll send you the slides. And I've actually recorded the audio as well, I hope, because I wasn't sure whether this talk was being recorded or not. Was this talk recorded?
Yes.
Okay.
Sort of. I mean, yes, it was recorded. I don't know how effective it was. Okay.
I thought I'd make sure I had a good audio.
Okay, thank you.
Can you take the mic off and... I have to be ready for the next presenter.
No, the mic is here.
And
there's... I haven't got... This is my mic.
That's your mic. Okay.
Your,
I
took that off and put it over here.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank
so
you.
I'm leaving it in your hands now.
Can I buy this one?
Okay. We got another buyer.
All right.
He just wants to say great job. Good
okay.
To see you again.
I know. Hi, Curtis.
Yeah, I want to just put something very primitive in a certain sense. When I'm trying to understand how the Lord interacts with the inmost of the soul...
The inmost internal?
Yeah, and how it the interaction all the way down.
Yes.
I find 279 section 6 of Divine Providence very helpful.
Yeah.
That affections are changes of state.
Yes.
In the form substances of the mind, and thoughts are, you know, the forms.
Yes.
And
Andy quoted that in his talk this morning.
Yeah, and that this continues all the way down in the mind.
Yeah.
Into the realm of the substances that are on the plane of gravitation, those on the plane of magnetism, electromagnetism, and so forth, and that it is. Influx by discrete degrees in accordance with correspondence.
Yeah.
And influx is in accordance with the state form of the receiving vessel.
Yes.
So we receive the Lord's life in accordance with the state of our mind. Let's bring it down to the mind.
Yes.
And then the mind is active in the same way in the body. And these levels of substance, substance in the body, respond in accordance with their state.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's all there. Yes,
changes of state and variations of form. Boom, boom, boom.
Yes, I agree completely.
And influxes in accordance with correspondence.
Well, okay, we have to spell it out, what that means.
Right, working together.
Yes, yes.
You know, in other words, what is the?
I think of
substances of the body. Inmost substances of the body and their degree, the mind will be able to function through them in accordance with their state. You get a blow to the head, you know, or wrong chemicals in your brain.
Okay.
It changes the state of that receiving vessel,
Indeed.
So
I agree.
A very simple sort of approach, but changing the variation form. And as you come down, influx being...